You're listening to Thriving Church Leadership, a church board development podcast, a dialogue to encourage church leaders to rise to the noble task of church leadership. Through a series of conversations with godly, experienced, and insightful individuals, we've dived deep into this very unique space of leadership, specifically formal church leadership, such as pastors, elders, deacons, trustees, and board leadership as a whole within the church. I'm Brett Elder and your co-host for today's episode, and I'm pleased to present, perhaps for the first time publicly, Dr. Brian Walker. Dr. Walker, I am honored to share this public news of your recent achievement, becoming a doctor.
Yes.
Somehow I feel like I need to genuflect or do something very reverent in your presence.
As one would.
Yeah. And maybe even eat healthier and exercise.
Yeah, I have
because
a tongue
you are
of pressure.
A doctor.
I have a tongue of pressure in my pocket now.
Uh-huh, so, yeah. But truly, this is an amazing achievement. And I want to hear a little bit about what that achievement means and just even the relevance in the conversations we're having today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Brett. This is Brian, and I am really I'm honored to be here with y'all. And it's my degree that I just recently completed is a PhD in Christian leadership from Liberty University. And it's got a concentration in ministry leadership. And it's just, it was a neat journey for me to be on, a long journey to be on, but to be able to be better at serving our pastors and serving our boards as I work throughout the country. And this degree has really allowed me to understand better the realities of church leadership and ministry leadership. So it's nice to be done. To your point, I just defended my dissertation a week ago, so I am officially complete.
That's amazing, actually. I know that you put a lot of hard work into it. Yeah. More than just printing off the degree itself, right from the
the
online.
I bought that degree. Yeah.
Understood. very relevant to the conversations that we've been having and will continue to have in this podcast. This episode, we're turning our attention to changing church ministry paradigms through some new ministry opportunities. And I know you know our guest very well, so I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. So when we do these podcasts, our goal is to bring experts into the conversation to give us unique and new insight so we can better serve our pastors and provide better service resources for our boards. Today, we have a guest on he's on the line. He's on the cell phone. And just like Dr. Price was on our last podcast, this is a friend of mine. He lives on the east side of the country in Eastport, Long Island. And I on the other line here is Dr. Scott Paskowitz. And Scott's a friend of mine. He is a faithful servant. He's been at the church, the Eastport Church over on the east side of the country, which is a church affiliated with the Grace Gospel Fellowship. So it's really an honor and a pleasure to have Scott on the phone. So Scott, hey, thank you for being here. It's good to have you.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Cool. Good. Thanks. Hey, for our listeners, we've had a chance before this to talk with you, but would you give us an introduction of yourself so our listeners can get an understanding of just the ministry that we're going to be talking about?
Yeah. So I'm a physical therapist by trade. The doctorate is a clinical doctorate, so it's not a research doctorate like Dr. Walker there. That kind of doctorate speaks to kind of just even the way I function in church, right? I'm very practical, hands-on, functional with that. So, I've been at Eastport Bible Church most of my life, over 40 years. And I've been pretty much involved in every ministry except for weddings and funerals. One of the things that I've been able to do over the years is start a fair number of ministries. New ministries in the church. And, in my physical therapy journey professionally, I just sold my last practice. I had, we had seven facilities at one time. And I've sold the pieces over the years, but in that sort of work, I mean, in running a company, you have to, you're always starting new things and have to implement. And I've really, God's given me the experience professionally, but also, I've taken that into, the church and parachurch organizations.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've really been encouraged by is your ability to bring an entrepreneurial spirit, I think. I don't know. What do you think of that word, Brett? Does entrepreneurial spirit and church, do they mix? Am I going to get...
I hope they do, because I'm passionate about that myself. But no, that's what I'm hearing as well. Anyone who has a degree in physical therapy and a degree in church ministry clearly is thinking outside the box already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk about your other degrees and some of the other things you, beyond the professional work, Scott. What are some of the ministries you're involved with in some of the schooling you've been through?
Yeah, so schooling, I have a bachelor's degree in physical therapy, which really doesn't exist anymore. I'm kind of speaks to how long I've been in the field. I started working at a hospital, realized I didn't want a master's degree in physical therapy, so I got a master's degree in business. I have an MBA. And then that led me just in that thought process of that education, led me into other things. And I served on a board of directors for something called the Timothy L. Children's Ranch for 7 years. And that's a whole conversation in itself, and really allowed me to work out, you know, what I learned in my MBA program in strategic planning and even just really entrepreneurial stuff, really outside the box type of stuff, working with troubled teens, homeless, recently paroled jail folks. And then, you know, some parachurch stuff. I'm involved in an orphanage. I received, I'd say, a calling about 10 years ago to help to build a couple schools in Burkina Faso in a town called Kaya. And that vision was actually realized just 2 weeks ago. We opened up the high school. The elementary school has been running for a couple of years.
Amazing.
I also am involved with go ahead.
That's amazing. That's great to hear.
Oh, yeah. Praise to God. I mean, that's all. This little guy from Eastport, New York is, you know, it boggles my mind. But then I partnered with this other guy, Ken Charles, who's part of a ministry called God's Vision Ministries. He's a persecuted Christian from Pakistan. Amazing story. We're in the middle of writing his book, his autobiography. But anyway, so we've opened up a number of Bible institutes in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, and now we're trying to start a Christian university in Pakistan. So yeah, that's outside the church. And then just at Eastport Bible Church, a number of ministries, which I'm sure we'll get into, small groups, discipleship, prayer ministries, evangelism ministries. Yeah, so that's kind of my background. Got the master's degree in Christian ministry and discipleship from Liberty University. So fellow alumni there with Brian. Yeah, go Flames. Beat BYU 2 weekends ago. So yeah, that was good. So anyway, that's a little bit of my background.
Wow. You don't let a lot of grass grow under your feet like a good entrepreneur.
I drive my wife nuts.
Yeah.
Rosina. So one of the things, Scott, we in the process of this podcast, we've tried to bring in different kind of experts, and clearly the idea of talking with pastors makes sense, and, you know, to get ideas, and board members make sense to understand governance. And but a really important element of what we also believe is important, is key to this discussion, is talking with folks who are in the church, maybe not a board member, maybe not a pastor, and how a person inside of a church, a congregant, a member, a person who's highly engaged, can make a difference. And so we want to tease that out. But one of the things that we want to talk about is the state of the churches that they're in right now post-COVID. And while this is a general description, it's certainly not encompassing, and nor is it data-driven, but it's just my experience and my understanding as I meet churches around the country. As COVID has influenced church ministry around the country particularly, a lot of churches have lost program. They've lost Sunday school, or they've lost Awana, or the churches that they would have a VBS program, and now they can't even draw that together anymore. And pastors are concerned, boards are concerned about, well, what do we do now? And it doesn't seem like options exist. And one of the things that really intrigued Brett and I about bringing you in was your experience with bringing in ministry throughout the course of your life at Eastport in particular. Could you talk about, I just gave you a big intro to a point, but maybe talk about that idea, that in that paradigm that you bring when you do talk about ministry expansion or new innovative things. Riff on that a little bit with us.
Yeah. So I think it, so I'm, I haven't been on the board for probably about 20 years now. So I'm not an elder in the church. I did serve on the board for 3 years. So, you know, it really starts with a let's call it a vision from God or a calling from God. I'm hesitant to use the word vision sometimes because people kind of misinterpret that as, you know, kind of dreaming dreams, but really just a calling, and it really comes through prayer. So, you know, I really think that if you're honestly seeking the Lord and you're, you know, someone who wants to get on board with God and kind of ride the wave and ask that question, God, you know, what can I do for you, right? And then, and God, for a person like myself who's entrepreneurial, I'm always full of ideas. And it really starts with the prayer. And then I think it starts, you know, with humility. Because a lot of times people have an idea and they kind of make it about themselves. And so if it's really going to be of God, you have to be humble. And you can't have an agenda other than wanting to do what the Lord has called you to do. And that's to kind of implement this, some sort of new program. So I think it really starts with that. And you know, you have to work through people, right? You have to get the senior pastor on board, some key board members, some key people in the church, anytime you implement anything. And, you know, look, people can see through agenda, right? Mm-hmm. So if I come at it and I'm anything less than a pure agenda with a humble heart, it's not going to fly. And I've had some ideas where it's probably been more me than God, and they've fallen flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, you know, I was going to come back to that. You reference this idea of coming at it with humility, and can you think of maybe in your own experience just how an idea that generated didn't get any traction? Can you talk about that and maybe why it didn't get traction? You know, to the best of your knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I had this great idea, and it was, let's start an evangelism team. At Eastport, right? I mean, that's a great idea. Like, okay, let's tell more people about Jesus. Like, how could that not work, right? And you know, I was probably in my early 30s, mid 30s, and you know, I kind of had this like attitude, like I can do anything, and I'll just push through anything. And you know, I didn't get, you know, I told the pastor about it, but I really didn't get him buying in. I kind of just told the board they were going to do it or should do it, and didn't get really like a buy-in, and I didn't involve like key people in the church. And it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, in leadership, like, you know, if you get too far ahead of people, like you look behind, nobody's following you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think looking back, I mean, you always think your heart's in the right place, but looking back, it was probably more about me and what I could implement and accomplish because I thought my skill set was so great. And, you know, we implemented it, but it did some good things. I mean, we were counting how many people were evangelized and, you know, shared the gospel with and tried to get people involved. And you know, we hit the 10,000 mark, but it didn't continue. Hmm. Right. And I always felt like I was fighting this uphill battle. And so that's just, yeah, I didn't get the right people. I didn't come at it with the right attitude. And it fell flat. It never went anywhere. Mm. And even what was done, I felt it was all just my effort, not from the Lord.
Mm. Well, unlike Dr. Walker, who starts out with the negative, I was going to ask the positive side of that question. And maybe you could share with us some ministry that has been implemented that has seen success, and maybe just kind of walk through the steps of why you think that was so successful or had some traction.
Yeah, the small group program at Eastport Bible Church was something that I took a small group program in Liberty as part of my master's degree in discipleship. And the final project was kind of identify, you know, there's three types of small group churches that in relation to small groups, and identify your church and then come up with a strategy to make them a group, a church that has a thriving small group program. So we had to write a manual and everything. So, and part of that was, you know, the steps to do it. And it was like, get the buy-in from the pastor. The senior pastor has to be the guy who is running this, who's really the cheerleader. Got to get key board members involved and this whole strategy. So I wrote up the manual. I gave it to the board, and I talked to the pastor. He got really excited about it. who then gave it to the board and they approved it. Then what I did was I had an educational time where I had a Sunday school class just about small groups. And then part of the class was, okay, we're going to, as this Sunday school class, we're going to actually run a small group from the group that's in the Sunday school class. And then we did that. And in that group, I had key people who would become small group leaders. So we built in the multiplication model into that small group. And then once we had that base and we had a little bit of buzz and we had two groups running, I then went and really advertised and announced in the church. So a lot of times what happens, you have an idea and it's like, yeah, let me get in front of the church and we'll try to do that and announce it and promote it. And then it kind of falls flat because you didn't have the base. So that was you know, a different way in how I implemented that. But I view myself as the guy behind the guy. I'm the guy that makes it happen, but I'm not the guy in front. So I knew the pastor needed to be that guy.
So you're almost suggesting starting up piloting, getting some groundswell of interest before you start broadcasting more programmatic efforts throughout. Is that what you're saying in, to some extent?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You want to build a culture that's more of a base, but you want to build the culture and then you carry that over into a broader base of the whole congregation. And I did this the same thing with discipleship. You know, just used the same strategy and it worked brilliantly. And to the point that now we actually have a pastor of discipleship. Jeremy Herr is now the pastor of youth and discipleship. So, and I employed the same strategy. We're implementing right now, my wife and I are implementing a prayer ministry at EBC. And I'm again, using the same strategy and it seems to be working pretty well. So I think I'm onto something here.
Yeah. So the interesting thing, and it's really important maybe for a moment to talk about Eastport Bible Church, because it's really easy for a pastor or for a church to say, well, we're small. And so, you know, yeah, those bigger churches can do these big things, but we're small and we're limited, and which is not untrue. But to understand the context of Eastport Bible Church, Scott, give us a description, you know, congregation size. I know you just spoke about having a second pastor on staff, which is unusual maybe for smaller churches. Talk a little bit about Eastport, if you would, just so we get some context of your process.
Yeah.
During the season, actually, even during the seasons of time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Eastport just celebrated its 200th anniversary. So that was a major accomplishment. We probably average about 175 in our two services on a Sunday morning. But we have a really vibrant youth program. Pastor Jeremy does a great job, probably has about, I don't know, on a weekly basis, maybe 40 or 50 kids that attend, most from outside the church. We have something called Hang Time. So we're right across the street from elementary school, and we have an after-school program on Wednesdays that have up to like 100 kids that come, you know, mostly outside of the church, and a bunch of other youth programs. I don't care how big you are, right? If you have if you have a small groups program, one that's focused on multiplication, multiplying those small groups, that's built in outreach. It doesn't matter what your size is. If you're 20 people, well, you can have a small group. Discipleship. I know there's some goals set at Eastport that Jeremy set that, hey, you know, we want to have, you know, a certain percentage of the people, you know, say there's 175 people. I don't know what the goal is, but, you know, right now I think we have 50 people engaged in one-on-one discipleship relationships. Small groups, we were up to 80% let's say we had 100 people, you would have 80 people in small groups. You know, in a Sunday morning, that's how you kind of gauge success or, you know, with small groups. So I don't care how big you are, you can scale these things. And, you know, if you have a church of 50 and you have, you know, 50% of the people involved in small groups, that's great. If you have, you know, 25 people involved in one-on-one discipleship relationships in a church of 50, that's amazing, right? So it doesn't matter the size of the size of the church.
In regard to the small group ministry, Scott, did you allude to three categories of churches relationship to small groups?
And I forget which book it is, but it's a church that the church that has small groups, a church that is small groups, and a church that has small groups. And there's another category, but basically like a church that basically just has a couple Bible studies, there's no real organization. Then you have another church that has small groups that are, you know, you have organization type of thing, but you have all these other programs. And then you have a church that is small groups. In other words, let's say you just started a small group and that small group multiplied. And now there's no formal, really formal like Sunday morning church, but it's just a group of small groups that are connected by this multiplication. And eventually, sometimes those small group that have multiplied, they then kind of form and say, hey, let's rent some space at a warehouse and let's come together and worship. So those are the three types of churches when it comes to small groups. Eastport Bible Church is a church that has small groups. We're not a church that is small groups. It's just not just the way we've been built, or we'll never get there, and it's not appropriate for Eastport.
Is there a better or righter way, in your estimation, for a church to function in terms of small group ministry?
I think that the two, you know, the church that is small groups and a church that has small groups, I mean, if both can be very healthy. I don't think there's one way that's better than the other. I think the church that doesn't have small groups is probably the less healthy one, because you're not, you know, those type of churches, it's more like, hey, let's come to church at our service. Let's go to a Bible study. And that's how I view like my Christian life to be. A small group ministry, it's not just Bible study. It's not just prayer. It's really actively getting involved in people's lives and that concept of multiplication. So if you have that going on in your church, that's great. If you're, and I see a lot of these churches that are kind of just struggling, and it's just they're stuck in that model of, hey, let's go to the 11 o'clock service. Let's maybe go to a Bible study. Maybe we'll just go to Sunday school in the morning before church. And that's pretty much their church existence. And those are the ones that I think are struggling a little bit more.
So let me zoom out for a moment about the topic of small group and let me zoom back out to a high level conversation of bringing something in into a church that requires some energy. You know, it's not uncommon for me to hear at a church visit, you know, that church over there does an incredible VBS, so we need to be VBS, or that church over there has Awana, and we just need Awana, or small groups, or a music choir, or whatever it might be, and they look kind of longingly at either what they were, maybe even before COVID, or at the church around the corner or across the town, and they say, "Boy, we really need it." And that's an interesting level of pressure that a pastor feels, because they have to begin building a program maybe without some key elements. And as you were talking, I just came up with kind of a mathematical equation, which is not entirely accurate, but I kind of hear this, and Brett and Scott talked to this. It seems as if to build a program or paradigm shift in a ministry to bring something in, it requires a couple of really key elements. Maybe it's more like a recipe card than a mathematical equation. It needs, and it's going to have some the letter P in it, because it sounds like a sermon, but it's just the only things I came up with. It needs a person. It needs an idea. It needs prayer, and I think this would be sequential. It needs the pastor. Then it needs permission to proceed, and then a plan needs to be built, and then communication about that plan. And I know that that's just really thrown down on paper quick, but the idea of, hey, we need to build an Awana program, and it just spawns out of nothingness, is not how it went for you, Scott. You went through a series, especially as you look at the successful or the implemented things that you came up with.
Okay, I'm a slow learner. Yeah. Rattle those off again.
Okay. It requires a person. So a person in a small church is they're there. You have Scott Paskowitz at Eastport. So it starts with a person who has an idea, who bathes it in prayer, who presents it to the pastor, who gets permission to proceed at that point. So it's not coming around the pastor, it's going through the pastor. And then a plan is built in collaboration with the pastor. What does the pastor have the stomach for? What can we do that fits within the ministry that he allows or is allowable? And then the communication of it. And Scott talked about talking, you know, speaking it at a Sunday school and present it to the congregation as it moves. So that they're to the point that Scott brings up, I think Ken Blanchard brings it up also, or maybe it's Henry Blackaby. If you are leading and no one's following you, you're not leading. And so how do you keep that from happening? I'm sure there's pieces missing out of that sequence, but speak to that, guys. What a pastor wants to create an Awana program. That's jumping over about six different steps to get there, at least from what Scott has shown. Do you guys see that? Where do you see holes, or where do you see that maybe clearly there's a handful more after the plan and the communication, but talk to that idea.
Yeah. So I think also, yeah. So in there, one thing I see is human resources, right? So there's, you know, you have a small church. Most of the people listening out there, probably small churches. It's like, all right, who's going to do this? And it's not just a guy and a pastor to bring the idea and the pastor, you know, you need people to do this. And there's only so many things that people can do in a church. So it's really prioritizing. And this is where the paradigm shifts comes in. So with small groups, what was happening was our adult Sunday school program was down to like five or six people. Our evening service was down to like the same seven or eight people who probably knew the Bible inside and out. So it's like, you know, but you know, this is the way we do things. Right. So it holding on to that sacred cow, so to speak, and not be, you know, that was the kind of the battle was like, all right, you know, where do we want to have the pastor's time? What's the best use of his time? You know, do we want him, you know, preparing a Sunday evening service for the same seven people? And do we want, you know, people teaching, preparing all these, whether you have, you know, five people or 100 people, your preparation time is still the same for a class.
Right.
So what's the best use of people's time, and what, you know, what's the goal? What are the goals of the church? How does Sunday school, how does the adult, the evening service fit into the overall mission, vision, goals of the church? And it was obvious that they weren't really filling that. So this was a battle that had to be fought with the pastor and the board. I wasn't in on that, but I understand there were some pretty, you know, lively discussions on that. And so what happened? Yeah. So what happened was that the pastor, you know, we gave up the evening service, we gave up adult Sunday school, we went to this small group model. And, you know, so at its peak prior to COVID, we had like 125 people a week that were attending a small group program, which, you know, we had five people in the Sunday school class and seven people in the evening service.
So that was where my mind was headed. I was looking at it from maybe a more cynical angle, because I have the gift of cynicism. But I was thinking that's a pretty good formula on the fly, Brian. But I think one of the things that I find in church leadership is that if we don't start out understanding or with some sort of discussion about what success looks like, what the missional objective is, it's almost impossible to hit the kill switch. And so what that formula that you rattled off on the fly does is it implements something new, but just adding to the pile of things that you do doesn't mean that you're making things better by adding something. Sometimes, and most of the time, I would contend you need to subtract something. And saying no is a tough thing to do, because of all the things I've heard you mention, Scott, you've talked about implementing discipleship ministry and small group ministry and prayer ministry, like, man, from a spiritual perspective, like, are you against prayer? Why would you want to kill the prayer ministry, right? Are you against small groups? Why would you, you know, are you against Awana? You just don't like kids anymore? Like, what's going on here? And what I realize is that people come with ideas, and those ideas are often based on a personal passion, right? It's a personal passion. They see a void. They may not be wrong, but there's opportunity costs. And you think you mentioned them, Scott, right? Human resources. What is the measure of success for our congregants? For example, is the object to get them to be at church every night for a church activity, right? Because I know that in my experience, sometimes that's what it looks a lot like. We would never admit that. But ultimately, when we add things without making the tough decisions and subtracting, that's what it looks like. We're saying, hey, you're more spiritual, of course, if you come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. But now you're just here Monday through Wednesday. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a good catch, Brett, because the risk of ministry, I suppose, is that we are that busy equals productive. And Will Mancini, in his book Future Church, talks about the idea of when your mission, if you can really be confident in your mission of your ministry, he talks about kind of using the analogy of a two-story building, and at the bottom, in the main floor of the building, metaphorically, is your program, but your program is meant to bring people to the second story, which is the ministry. If you're missing that, and you're just busy for busy's sake, and you're not bringing people into the church to really experience what the church does at its very best place and its sweet spot, you're missing, and you become busy for the sake of busy. When you think Scott of the even maybe the prayer ministry that you and Rosina are starting, or the small group, how did you, without even having maybe Will Mancini's book in front of you, how were you able to make sure that what we're doing is bringing people in and up, not in and through?
Yeah. Well, when the Lord laid this prayer idea on my heart, the first thing I did was, pray about it, talk to Rosina about it. And then I went out, I took Pastor Caleb out to lunch, and I said, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Esports going into some uncharted territory. We're in a building phase. We're going to put up a 5,000 square foot multi-purpose center. It's going to cost probably $2 million. We've never done anything like that before. We're maybe talking about planting another church at some point in time in a couple of years. And I said, you know, it's just going to, if we don't really commit to prayer and raise the level of prayer up of the entire congregation, you know, I just don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish that. So he was like, yeah, like we need to be more intentional, more strategic about prayer. And so that's, you know, once I got his kind of blessing, I said, all right, let's put a team together. And so I have an elder, I have a matriarch, one of the matriarchs of the church, my wife, Caleb, another person. And we just kind of came up with ideas of, okay, how can we get Eastport Bible Church praying more and more effectively, intentional, strategically, in line with the mission and vision of the church. And, we came up with some of these very practical ideas. And again, it's not about getting people in the building. I mean, small groups is they're outside the church. Discipleship happens outside the church. The prayer is going to mostly happen, a lot of it outside the church. Yes, I don't know if that answers the question, but that's...
Yeah, I think you, in one fell swoop, answered my question and Brian's as well.
Very well.
Hey, these are fascinating conversations, and don't want these episodes to drag on because we're excited, and we want people to be excited about that. Want to pick up the conversation in the next episode. But as we close out this episode, is there one... I don't know if there's just a final comment for those that you might have, Scott, anyone trying to implement a ministry within a church, what would be sort of a few key pieces of advice you'd give them?
I would say if you're a pastor, find that guy who's humble and doesn't have an agenda and just wants to serve, but is an entrepreneur and knows how to implement and has a track record of implementing. A lot of people want to do stuff, but they just don't really have the skill set to implement. So if you're a pastor, I'd say find that guy and, set him loose a little bit within with some structure.
Or girl.
If you're a guy like me, just pray a lot. Try to be as humble as possible, even though we're not ever perfect at that. And just look to, like, the prayer of Jabez, right? Lord, expand my territory. So, and it's really not my territory. It's the Lord's territory through me. And just pray those big prayers.
That sounds like a good starting point.
Mm.
prayer and humility.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Scott, thank you. I mean, really, the audience gets just a little bit of thumb scratch of the ministry leadership you've brought, and we're really looking forward to bringing you back in and talking more about this topic of ministry development, ministry implementation, paradigm shifting, some of the things that we do in a ministry so we can make room for opportunities. So thank you. That's just been really helpful.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed our time together.
Excellent. So until next episode, I just want to encourage everyone who's listening down that path of church leadership, just that we strive to glorify God in the ministries that we implement. Thank you, Scott, for your time.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Have a great day.